Indie Media is DIY news. It is about people reporting their own news directly without the need for reporters, bypassing the corporate media.
There are 100 Indie Media or IMC websites worldwide providing grassroots reports of struggles, campaigns and protests.
There are so many people here who are saying no to the government today, and this is democracy in action.
Everybody's here. Everybody in the country seems to be here. They're just coming from all over the place. The banners are showing all the tiny, tiny little pockets of the country. Everybody has come down here.
The project started 3 years ago, covering the massive Seattle protests, which shut down the World Trade Organization's summit.
Uncensored and unsponsored, IMC sites can be updated anywhere, anytime, by anyone.
The open-to-all nature of these sites means that you can publish your own reports about your own issues and at the same time connect to a global network of grassroots news.
What you are about to hear are some highlights
from these global websites and from our very own UK IMC Wire. For more information or to get the news direct from the streets, check out www.indiemedia.org.uk.
Is waking outside my window. Bella ciao, bella ciao, bella ciao, ciao, ciao. Drags my senses into the sunlight, for there are things that I must do. Wish me luck now, I have to leave you. Bella ciao, bella ciao, bella ciao, ciao, ciao. With my friends now up to the city, we're gonna shake the gates of hell. The bastards drop down dead. Next time you see me, I may be smiling. Bella ciao, bella ciao, bella ciao, ciao, ciao. I'll be in prison or on the TV. I'll say the sunlight dragged me here.
Hello, welcome to the Indie Media Radio London show.
Hello.
Hello, and a happy Paddy's Day to everybody out there, and this is the day to bring a little bit of green into your house.
And now, over to Sian.
Yesterday was 1 year since Rachel Corrie was killed by a caterpillar bulldozer in the occupied territories. And now we're going to hear a recording from Tom about what happened a year ago today.
I spent 3 months living in the town of Rafah in the south of the Gaza Strip. In Rafah, the Israeli army is building a wall, which entails the destruction of hundreds of Palestinian homes. For this, the Caterpillar D9 and D10 bulldozers are used. Often, families are woken in the middle of the night by a burst of machine gun fire against their wall and have to be out within 15 minutes. The bulldozers then level their homes, often leaving the family with no chance to collect their possessions. The families, now amounting to thousands of people in total, are left homeless. If they are lucky, they're given a tent to live in by the UN. The Caterpillar bulldozers are also lethal, though. You've probably heard of the story of my friend Rachel Corrie, who was bulldozed to death while she attempted to protect a Palestinian family's home from destruction. The bulldozer driver turned toward her as she knelt in front of the house and, with her in full view, bulldozed straight over her. What didn't reach the news, however, was that 2 weeks before, three Palestinians had been killed by bulldozers into an incursion into a refugee camp near Khan Yunis, just north of Rafah. Among these was a pregnant woman who had refused to leave the house. The bulldozers just carried straight on and toppled the house over her. Caterpillar is well aware that this is going on, but continues to sell its products to Israel. Britain allows Caterpillar to sell these products to Israel and endorses these with the Israeli Pavilion, which is going to be held at Dicey. The ISM is going to be at Dicey to protest against this.
Come, you masters of war, you that build the big guns, Yeah, that build the death planes. Yeah, that build all the bombs. Yeah, that hide behind walls. Yeah, that hide behind discs. I just don't want you to know I can see through your masks. You that never done nothing but build to destroy. You play with my world like it's your little toy. You put a gun in my hand and you hide from my eyes. And you turn and run farther when the fast bullets fly. Like Judas of old, you lie and deceive. A world war can be won. You want me to believe, but I see through your eyes, and I see through your brain. Like I see through the water that runs down my drain. You fasten all the triggers for the others to fire. And then you sit back and watch when the death count gets higher. You hide in your mansion while the young people's blood flows out of their bodies and is buried in the mud. You've thrown the worst fear that can ever be hurled. Fear to bring children into the world, for threatening my baby, unborn and unnamed. You ain't worth the blood that runs in your veins. How much do I know but to talk out of turn? You might say that I'm young. You might say I'm unlearned. But there's one thing I know. I'm younger than you. That even Jesus would never forgive what you do. Let me ask you one question. Is your money that good? Will it buy you forgiveness? Do you think that it could? I think you will find when your death takes its toll, all the money you made will never buy back your soul. And I hope that you die, and your death will come soon. I follow your casket by the pale afternoon, and I watch while you're lowered down to your deathbed.
As we mentioned earlier, Rachel Corrie was killed a year ago yesterday by a D-10 Caterpillar bulldozer. And in memory of Rachel, a group of people went into the Caterpillar factory in Shrewsbury, taking in flyers and leaflets to speak to the workers there, to explain to them that the bulldozers and the machinery that they construct in their factory are used to kill people. The action was a very successful action, with people managing to speak to the workers, who were quite friendly and prepared to listen and take the flyers, and in fact even offered to give the protesters safety goggles and offer them a tour of the bulldozer factory, which was quite surreal. Some people locked on, and
to gantries and dropped banners about Palestine and showed images of Rachel Corrie, the peace activist killed, and also Tom Handel, who was killed as well. It was a very successful action. Then the fire alarms went off and all the workers left. And the protesters were very much left inside in the factory by themselves. And whilst in there was lots of notice boards, and protesters reported that they saw that Caterpillar is manufacturing three new sorts of tank. And on the Caterpillar website, there's an awful lot of propaganda, I suppose, about Caterpillar's ethical policy. But in fact, they do make tanks. And as Tom said in the report that he recorded last year with regard to Rachel, they're well aware of what they're doing, but their PR is very, very much that they are ethical, but they do make weapons that, for all intents and purposes, for Palestinians, are weapons of mass destruction, because it destroys their homes and their lives. So I guess we'd just like to say well done to the protesters that went inside Caterpillar and closed the factory down. And just to make people aware that Caterpillar do, despite their propaganda about ethical foreign policy and things, they are manufacturing tanks that are being used in the illegally occupied territories in Palestine.
There have been pickets of Marks and Spencers every week for over the last 3 years on Oxford Street, London, as well as around the country from Manchester to Glasgow. The purpose of the demonstrations has been to highlight Marks and Spencer's support of Israel. 6 months ago, a right-wing group called Betar began a counter-demonstration. Their open and stated aim was to cause disruption under the Public Order Act, which would then give the police an excuse to close both pickets down. The police, in theory, are supposed to be unbiased and treat each side equally, but the reality is very different. Rather than moderate the provocation, they have reportedly stood aside while intimidating campaigners on the Palestinian demonstration. This allegiance was particularly exposed recently when the police came out in force with a very intimidating attitude toward the protesters. They began to photograph many picketers and singled out a Palestinian regular in the picket, who they surrounded and provoked to cheers by the opposing picket. They then issued the protesters with a notice under the Public Order Act Section 14, laying down regulations for static demonstrations. Attached was a dubious regulation claiming that they could not use their megaphone, as this would cause disruption. Well, with all the draconian legislation Blunkett has been introducing of late, it certainly seemed a plausible possibility. But after much frantic telephoning with lawyers, the picketers ascertained that the police were not in a position to impose such conditions on the demonstrations. Even so, they still threatened arrest, and the picketers got together to discuss the situation between themselves and reach a democratic decision on how to proceed. A vote was taken, and they decided to go ahead with the loudhailer. No arrests took place. The new law the police were claiming to be enforcing is the Public Assembly and Antisocial Behaviour Act 2003. The relevant section is Section 57. It came into force on the 24th of January 2004 and reduces the number of people who need to be present for Section 14 conditions to be implemented from 20 down to a shocking number of 2. Nonetheless, it does not add extra conditions onto the 1986 Act, so the senior officer on the scene can still only impose restrictions of number, location and duration. Furthermore, in order to do so, he or she needs to be satisfied that the demonstration poses a serious threat of public disorder or to the life of the community, or is designed for the purpose of intimidating someone.
sit back, close your eyes and imagine 1,000 people cycling along a central London street, filling the street. There are not any cars. The noise of traffic is drowned out by music, whistles, bike bells and people having conversations while cycling together. Now imagine you are riding along with these people. You don't need to worry about cars driving too close or getting across the junction in time. The mass of cyclists surrounding you, for as far as you can see, are moving very slowly, snaking through the city together as one. The traffic lights change to red, but the cars stay where they are and let you pass. The mass of bikes are moving together. You have time to look around. You notice things you never had time to see. You meet people you might never have met. You are now part of the Central London critical mass. On the same day, this is happening in cities all over the world, from Delhi to Tokyo, from Adelaide to Zurich, from Rio de Janeiro to the three separate rides in San Francisco, where the mass is so big they have to split up. There are hundreds of cities with hundreds, sometimes thousands of cyclists doing this every month. San Francisco started it all 11 and a half years ago, and London will celebrate 10 years of its critical mass on April the 30th this year. It starts from South Bank at Waterloo, in front of the National Film Theatre, under Waterloo Bridge, at around 6 p.m. And now, Labour Start, the London-based online trade union news service, has just launched a 24/7 radio station on the web. It already has listeners in 38 countries. Radio Labour Start features a mix of music and talk, including a daily 3-minute Labour news programme produced by the Workers' Independent News Service in the United States. Other features include a weekly tool time programme offering trade unionists advice and tips on how to use IT, urgent action alerts, including some recent ones from Iraq and Korea, interviews and more. The music being played is a mix of traditional Labour songs and more modern protest movement. Among the performers are Bob Dylan, Woody Guthrie, Tracy Chapman, Peter Seeger, Joan Baez, Bruce Springsteen, Utah Phillips and Billy Bragg. The station is also now playing versions of the global workers' anthem, the Internationale in 10 languages. Radio Labour Start is on the web at www.radiolabourstart.org. Now, I'm not sure if it's Labour spelt the American way or the British way, because it's written in the British way here. So if you don't get through on spelling it L-A-B-O-U-R, spell it L-A-B-O-R. Okay. And now, Blackwood.
Yeah, updates on the Blackwood protest camp. If you don't know, a little bit of background. It's in South Wales. The planned route of the road runs through St David's Wood, a beautiful area of ancient woodland which is home to various dormice, bats, buzzards, etc. The road is presented by the planners as either a bypass or an access road for Oakdale Business Park, depending on which suits their PR best at the time. It is being built as a PFI project by Costain, the same company who built the Newbury Bypass. The situation now, three protest camps, Kerry, Jordan and Swamp Camp, aka Camp 3, have now been set up alongside the route, each protecting a patch of surrounding woodland by the use of squatting laws. Eviction proceedings are still going through the courts, and the campers have managed to lodge several appeals. This means that, until Wednesday, today, the next court date at least, any eviction would be illegal. A huge amount of woodland has already been lost, including trees that were hundreds of years old. Not much has survived outside the camps. Numbers of people on site varies hugely. On the days when numbers are low, the chainsaw gangs cut down more trees and push closer and closer. And some reports from the Newswire that came in, I think, yesterday.
A muddy day in St David's Wood from the 16th of March. Today, protesters were outnumbered by bailiffs, 5, and police around 7 of them. In the morning, there were some attempts to obstruct work, including a few attempted lock-ons, but with little success. There were no chainsaws around, but other work was going on between Kerry and Jordan camps, clearing felled trees, shredding them and so on. Then, in the afternoon, somebody managed to de-lock themselves to a large vehicle, a bulldozer or something like that, and held things up for about an hour. After the police promised not to arrest him if he released himself, he unlocked and was promptly arrested. Another activist was also arrested for breach of the peace, generically used for people interfering with work. They were both held for a few hours and then released without charge. I spoke to one who said he hadn't been charged. I assumed the other hasn't been either, but don't know for sure. People are now being given formal warnings on camera, and some people have been threatened with arrest if they continue to interfere. Bailiffs have been pretty rough at times, especially when away from the cops, getting progressively more pissed off persistent individuals. We managed to get some of this on camera, including a driver who fancies himself as a bailiff and seems to like the chance to indulge a bit of random thuggery. A report there from someone who's at the camp.
Protesters stop work at Blackwood. This report, again posted 16th of the 3rd, 2004. Last Friday, work on the Sihui Enterprise Way, aka Blackwood Bypass, was completely stopped by protesters when the numbers were boosted by a group of about 14 activists from Oxford who had travelled down for the day. Excuse me. The Oxford posse drove down at 4 a.m. through a blizzard, with the snow pounding on the windscreen. The cold weather had its fun side, though, the opportunity for snowball fights with the bailiffs, but the spoil sports wouldn't throw them back. The five bailiffs found themselves outnumbered 4 or 5 to 1, so it was easy for people to obstruct work. There were two different locations in which Costain were trying to work, and by lunchtime they had completely given up for the day. They simply didn't have enough bailiffs to cover both locations. They also set up a third camp further along the track, although there were arguments over its name. Personally, I think Swamp Camp works well.
And some more from Indie Media UK on Blackwood. Locals are being led to believe that this project will help provide jobs at Oakdale Business Park, but any jobs are unlikely to be new jobs. It's the usual capitalist game of playing one area off against another. Our small gain will be someone else's loss. But even putting that aside and using the generous estimate of 1,000 jobs at Oakdale Business Park, then the cost of the new road, at least £54 million, is enough to pay those 1,000 people £18,000 a year for 3 years to do nothing. This isn't exactly a serious suggestion, but it illustrates the huge cost of this road. The point is, there are loads of more socially useful ways the money could be spent locally. Despite all the PR manipulation, public opinion is quite split. Even those who support the road express regrets about the woodland and are not hostile to protesters. Some say that the construction of the road is inevitable and trying to stop it pointless. On the other hand, there is also a lot of opposition. The camps have had fantastic support, and many of those actively obstructing work on a day-to-day basis are locals skipping school or college.
And if this is an appeal, if you can, please come and spend some time in the camps and or help block work. This is an appeal coming from the people who are in the camps at the moment. There are loads of useful roles. Any contribution is welcome. In Blackwood, a handful of people can literally make a huge difference. Blackwood is in the South Wales Valleys, north of Newport and Cardiff. Buses run from both Cardiff and Newport, both of which have train and coach stations, but Newport is nearer. On arrival in Blackwood, ask for directions to the Rock and Fountain pub, then head up the hill away from Blackwood. When the road curves to the right, turn left instead down a little residential street. You'll see the disused railway track. Cross over onto the track and keep walking in that direction. The camps are on the bank above you, first Kerry, then Jordan, then finally Swamp Camp at the end. If you can't get there, have a look at various contacts and addresses of companies involved and use your imagination. Any letters of support or chocolate or anything like that are gratefully received by the people at St David's Wood Protest Camp, Woodfield Park, Halls Crossing, Woodfield Side, Blackwood, NP12 OPF.
And that was signed by... it was signed Love and Solidarity, the Zapatistas of the South Wales Rainforest. You're listening to Resonance 104.4, the Indie Media Newswire Show.
Hear it for the good guys! Good guy. Yeah.
to bring myself down. The tears of the insane bounce like bullets off my brain. The subway is not the underground. Oh, New York City, goodbye. Oh, New York City, goodbye. Goodbye, New York City. Number people rush through the dawn with their number people faces on. Times Square is not the word for the sucking, squeezing herd. The subway is not the underground. Oh, New York City, goodbye. Oh, New York City, goodbye. Goodbye, New York City.
And now a roundup of stories that have been on the Russian indie media newswire. The Russian presidential election, farce or tragedy. Vladimir Putin has been re-elected as Russian president. The result surprised no one and pleased few, in spite of the vigorous campaigning by anti-war and alternative groups who held meetings and organised around the slogan, "Voting for Putin is voting for the Chechen war." He swept home to victory. The run-up to the election at times bordered on the surreal. A musical opened in Moscow performed by the Putin Youth Singers, in which the busty young heroine sings, "I need a man like Putin who doesn't drink. I need a man like Putin who won't beat me." Even more surreal, or should that be grim, was the fact that the region where Mr. Putin proved most popular and gathered the highest percentage of the vote was Chechnya. No doubt Russian authorities would ascribe this to the clear success of his policy in the region, but most people are more cynical. The result of the election bodes ill for Russian democracy, an increasingly rare beast, some would say even a mythical one. When he first came to power, he rendered the upper house toothless. The parliamentary elections recently saw him break the constitution and do the same to the lower house. Now he's been re-elected, it's hard to imagine how things could get any worse. He's instituted a system of central control over all natural resources, all media outlets, and is preparing to sell off the forests to logging and mineral extraction companies. Meanwhile, the boys in zinc coffins stream home from the front and the plunder of Chechnya continues. There's even a presidential monopoly on the Independent Commission on Monopolies. Elsewhere in Russia, there was a feminist demo and festival in Moscow. In Moscow, from the 6th to the 8th of March, a feminist festival and demonstration took place as part of International Women's Day.
Hooray!
The events were centred around redefining the assumed strongman, weak woman polarisation that still cripples Russian society. The 20th of March, we'll see an anti-war protest in Moscow, organised by those opposed to the continuing attack on Chechnya, increased militarisation in Georgia and Azerbaijan, where American troops have just been stationed, and, of course, the US-UK-led attack on Iraq. The Russian authorities have sanctioned the protest, but problems with the police are expected. And another report from the Russian wire was that there has been an ecological catastrophe in the North Caucasus. The Russian oil giant Gazprom has been accused by an independent environmental watch group of causing serious damage to the environment surrounding its gas plant in Krasnodar region. A gas extraction pipeline underground broke and worrying amounts of gas were released into the atmosphere and the surrounding populated areas were evacuated. That particular gas extraction site was subsequently deemed to be unsalvageable, and the escaping gas was ignited in the hope that that way the supply would run out. While the fire has since subsided and the area has been declared safe, the full extent of the environmental damage caused is only just coming to light. The gas leak continues in spite of official declarations to the contrary, and the population are suffering the consequences, severe nausea and dizziness, often necessitating hospitalisation. Atmospheric methane levels have quadrupled, and carbon monoxide and dioxide levels are 63 times higher than the safe norm. The Gazprom authorities have taken minimal interest in the suffering their negligence has caused, and this has become the latest in a long line of environmental disasters caused by the oil company. A nearby nature park has been affected, and wardens are concerned that the ecosystem has been severely damaged. Gazprom has denied all charges that it has breached national and international conventions on environmental protection of sites of specific natural and scientific importance, and a court case is being brought against them by ecologists and residents.
This week, neo-Labour bureaucrats gave the go-ahead for the commercialisation of the UK's first genetically modified GM crop, a fodder maize, with the snappy name Chardon LLT5. This new wonder crop is coming back to us from the test tubes of Bayer Crop Science. For more about one of our favourite companies, check out Snews, issue 436, and will supposedly only be fed to animals who, luckily for Bayer, can't say no. Despite massive opposition to GM in this country, this decision will give the biotech companies their first Frankenstein foot in the door. Bayer probably can't believe how easy it's been to blind the gullible Environment Minister Margaret Beckett with crap science. To prove that GM maize didn't damage the environment, field trials were carried out which compared GM maize to crop grown using a conventional growing system, which uses the pesticide astrazine, a pesticide which will be banned in the EU because it's so toxic. Some scientists think that these tests are a justification for giving the go-ahead. Chris Lamb, director of the John Innes Centre, commented that the decision was based on scientific evidence of an invalid field trial. But of course his judgment won't be clouded by the massive funding the John Innes Centre receives from the biotech companies and the government's Biological Research Council, whose aim is to help industry, commerce and government create wealth. Research was also carried out into the effect on cattle who will be fed the maize, but the results were obviously so bad the report was never published. The full details of conditions under which GM maize can be grown won't be published until the summer. Until then, it isn't clear whether the GM crops will be separated from other crops and whether the government will be obliging enough to publish where the crops will be grown. For the sake of the 3,000 people who have signed the Green Gloves Pledge to rip up GM crops when they're planted, let's hope they do. But it wasn't all good news for the biotech industry this week. The government rejected the commercialisation of GM beet and oilseed rape as a result of field-scale trials which showed GM varieties caused more damage to wildlife than conventional varieties. Also, Chardon LLT25 maize won't be grown this year and will have a licence that will only run until October 2006, the date when atrazine will be banned. So they have to hope the government gives the green light again. The biggest blow to the pro-GM lobby, though, is the government's decision that those who've developed and grown the GM seeds will have to accept all liabilities for any contamination of conventional and organic crops, although the biotech companies are none too happy with this. This may provide a faint glimmer of hope that GM crops won't be coming to a field near you soon.
We'll be right back. shoots off his mouth till we have no friends. How long we gonna take it till W goes home? When W goes home, so cool. Say goodbye to that sorry fool. He's a damn shame.
Listening to the Indie Media Newswire show on Resonance 104.4. That was, I'm not sure if the band is called GW Goes Home or the track, but it came off one of the Indie Media audio newswires. And on the subject of Indie Media Cinema presents on next Tuesday, the 23rd of March, 7 to 11, in the Ritzy Cinema in Brixton, top of Cold Harbour Lane. As part of an ongoing showcase of contemporary filmmakers who are finding new forms of cinema to show resistance to globalisation throughout the world, distributing and screening grassroots videos covering issues ignored or distorted by the corporate media, Indie Media London presents a night of collaborative work of alternative and radical video activism. Indefensible, Indie Media UK 2004. Dicey 2003, actions, protests and blockades against the Defence Systems and Equipment National Arms Fair that took place in London Docklands last September. There'll also be a stall and music there.
Remember the first march to Aldermaston? Never heard of the place and wondering what the fuss about Aldermaston is? Well, while people were wondering where the weapons of mass destruction were, they forgot to check out Berkshire. Way back in 1958, Britain's nuclear weapons programme caused such disquiet amongst the population that thousands of people joined a march from London to Aldermaston called by the Direct Action Committee Against Nuclear War. The march was a key point in the formation of the Campaign for Nuclear Disarmament. The symbol for nuclear disarmament, now the universal symbol of peace, was designed specifically for the march and was displayed on the original lollipop-style placards carried along the way. The atomic weapons establishment, where Britain's nuclear warheads are being designed and built, still exists at Aldermaston near Reading. What's more, planning permission has recently been given for an extensive development programme worth £5.3 billion, so people from across the country will again be marching to Aldermaston AWE over the Easter weekend, starting at Trafalgar Square, and there'll be delicious food laid on by veggies. To join in, just phone 0207 700 2350 or look at the www.aldermaston2004.net.
Also, 9 to the 12th of April, peace walk to Faz Lane Trident nuclear submarine base from Glasgow, leaving George Square at 1pm on the Friday. March and rally on the Monday, assemble 1pm at Faz Lane Peace Camp. For more information, get a pen, call 0141 423 1222. I'll say that again, 0141 423 1222. There's a website you can check out as well, which is www.hull, as in the place, .ac.uk. Also, it's been reported that an undercover lawyer from law firm Clifford Chance has been exposed as infiltrating an animal rights group. After questioning, he apparently admitted his agenda was to persuade activists to intensify the campaign against State Street Bank, which would enable Clifford Chance, State Street Lawyers, to move against various animal rights groups, including Stop Huntington Animal Cruelty. The bank are being targeted because of their association with Huntington Life Sciences. And Schnooze at 10 Tour. As part of their 10th birthday celebrations, some of the Schnooze alternative media crew are hitting the road again with a 16-date tour. They'll be showing some short films, talking about Schnooze, the G8 coming to Britain next year, and giving local groups a forum to talk about what they're up to. They'll be starting with Bath on the 10th of April and ending in Norwich on the 30th. For a full list of dates, see www.schnooze.org.uk.
And just give you some of the links from the GM article earlier. www.gmwatch.org, www.geneticssanction.org.uk, and it says here, almost 3,000 people have signed up to rip up GM crops if they're commercially planted. To sign up, go to www.greengloves.org. And now some... Well, on Saturday is another anniversary.
March, yes.
The first anniversary of the starting of the bombing of Iraq. And there's loads of things planned for... the 19th and the 20th. On the 19th, on Friday, block the base. You've marched to London, now come to the heart of the beast. For one day, let's disrupt the military machine. Non-violent blockade and demonstration at Menworth Hill, North Yorkshire, part of an international weekend of action against US militarism. That's www.blockthebase.org.uk. It's organised by Yorkshire CND. Info at yorkshirecnd.org.uk. Also on Friday, arms dealers out of our city. Local actions at arms companies around the country to draw attention to their activities. In Brighton, the focus will be on EDO MBM, who reside at Home Farm Business Park. The company boasts that it has a proven designer and manufacturer of weapons interfacing systems. In other words, these pleasant people make aerial bombing possible. Also on the 19th, Critical Mass in Bristol, and a theatrical protest and tour of Whitehall to mark 1 year since US-UK invasion of Iraq. The flyer looks very good. You can find that at www.voicesuk.org. On the 20th...
On the 20th, on Saturday, it is the anniversary, unfortunately, since basically the West started bombing Iraq. Not necessarily a positive day. It won't be a commemoration. I guess we'll be thinking a lot about all the people that have lost their lives due to war. 10,000 civilians. So I guess if people are going along to that, it will be a day of memory for people who are victims of war crimes.
And there's things planned all around the country for Saturday, including London, Glasgow, Aberystwyth, Manchester, Bristol, Brighton, and many more.
And that's it for this week. So we'll see you next week.
Yes, thank you very much.
We'd also like to apologise. We had some technical hitches at the start of the show with the Rachel Corey article. Sometimes our laptop doesn't play the right tracks. So we're really sorry about that. So listen next week. We'll be with all the updates from the 20th of March demonstration. Hopefully we'll have some really good reports from that. And now we're going out with an outro.
We're going out with, well, first of all, we've got an email address for comments and suggestions, which is...
I've no idea.
It's irlnewswire@ziplip.com. irlnewswire@ziplip.com. And we're going out with a little bit of audio off the Newswire of one of the Women's Day protests outside a prison. I'm not actually sure what one, because the article didn't say. And some music and a piece about American militarism by Mumia Abu-Jamal.
Quick roundup of what happened and why we're here.
Well, we came down because, as a protest against prisons, because it's International Women's Day and there's a lot of prison and women in prison, and most of the things they're in prison for is petty things like shoplifting. So, which is the kind of ridiculous thing to imprison people for, and we kind of felt angry about that. And it just kind of so clearly shows that actually the laws that are made up in this society are just made up to protect the people who make profits. Whereas the real crimes are the fact that there is poverty in this world, and the real criminals are the ones that make us work for really sh money and then charge us loads of money to live in properties and stuff. So it makes us really angry that freedom is taken away from people who should just have a right to live, to live in peace and in freedom that we all have the right to. So that's why we came to protest, and we made a lot of noise so that hopefully inside they'll hear us. Because one of the things is that they lock people up and they've not got any contact to the outside world. We've had these leaflets that have been given out, and we tried to give them to visitors to take in to the prisoners, and they're not even allowed to take a piece of paper in. So we've been trying to make a lot of noise to let the women know that we support them and that we don't think they should be locked up.
Were many people here today? How many people in the room?
Oh, I reckon there was 60, 70 all together.
Cool. Any,
yeah.
Any,
it's like,
any incidents, any trouble?
At some time we tried to go in front of these vans that were bringing more prisoners in order to stop the vans getting through and taking more women into prison. There's already 4,400 women in prison, which is 4,400 too many. And we were just moved out of the way. There wasn't really any big trouble.
Right, so, cause it might be no next time. Rise up, rise up, ooh. Rise up, rise up, ooh. Rise up, rise up, ooh. Rise up, rise up,
rise up,
all wounded soldiers, a revelation time. Come make us stand up in line. Sing out,
rise up, rise up,
all wounded soldiers, rise up and take your stand. We've got to hold up the foundation. All the oaths fall down. Oaths fall down. Oaths fall down. Blessed is the man and the woman that walketh not in the counsel of the wicked, nor standeth in the ways of sinners, nor sitteth in the seat of the scornful. But they delight in the law of the Almighty Jah, and in Jah law do they meditate day and night. They shall be like a tree that is planted by the rivers of water that bringeth forth fruits in due seasons. Their leaves shall not wither, and whatsoever they do shall they prosper. For the wicked are not so, but the light shaft that the Almighty Jah shall drive before them. Therefore, sinners shall not stand in judgment, nor the wicked in the assembly of the righteous, for the Jah know of the ways of the righteous. All wounded soldiers, a revelation time. Come make us stand up in line.
Struggling again through the mind of the masses. We struggle sideways.
When U.S. President George W. Bush spoke about an endless war, some took it as mere political speech or rhetoric designed to gain the top spot on the evening network news. I did not. W. is an agent of his class, the wealthy oil merchants of the land, and his intentions are to press for an ever wider war in all corners of the earth to make the world safe for capital exploitation and unbridled commerce. This will eventually become a war that reaches into a slew of countries in the Middle East and beyond on behalf of the rich and powerful elites who rule. Make no mistake, this is a war that has nothing to do with democracy. The U.S. enters the region armed to the gills not to defend democracies, but to defend theocracies, to defend kings, princes, and sultanates, to defend U.S. access to vast oil resources in the region. And how can the U.S. credibly claim to be leading a war against terrorism when the world's largest training academy for terrorists is the School of the Americas in Georgia, where some of the most brutal military dictators in the world are alumni? The U.S. may have since renamed the school, but it has the same essential mission: to create foreign military leaders who are the enemies of democratic and popular movements and who are beholden to their imperial masters in Washington. The graduates of the FOA have proven relentless fighters, to be sure, who are masters of the dark arts of torture, cruel interrogations, rape, and mass murder. And who do they fight but their own people? To millions of people in Latin America, the school is known by the popular name La Escuela de Golpes, the School of Coups. There's scarcely an infamous massacre that cannot be traced to its graduates. The Uraba massacre in Colombia, the El Mozote massacre, the rape and murders of four U.S. church women, and the Jesuit massacres in El Salvador, the La Cantura massacre in Peru, and hundreds more. When the U.S. brays about a war on terrorism, there are millions in America to the south who snort in derision, for they know another America which breeds state terrorism. The people who brought you 9/11 were brought to you by the CIA, for they were all graduates of a CIA school of terrorism designed to wreak havoc upon the soldiers of the former Soviet Union. They were jihadis recruited, paid, indoctrinated, and armed by U.S., Pakistani, Saudi, and related intelligence agencies to wage a holy war against the former communist government in Afghanistan. And like the proverbial dogs of war, they turned on those who fed and trained them to remind them of what they've unleashed. And now, with little thought to its true beginnings, the nation is once again embroiled in war. A war that was born not in Kabul, nor in the tropical Orient. This war began in cool office buildings in Washington, where men of wealth and power drew up plans to draw the former Soviets into a neighboring territory, into what they called the Afghan trap. And now, as Malcolm X once said, the chickens have come home to roost. You want to stop war? Then stop them where they are born, in Washington, D.C. From Death Row, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal.